I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Republicans did not have enough votes this past summer to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. So last week, President Trump, using an executive order, ended subsidy payments to insurance companies that helps millions of healthcare consumers afford coverage. This was in addition to an order greenlighting plans that don't have to abide by the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. We asked Mary Agnes Carey to join us. She's partnerships editor and senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News. And Mary Agnes, it's nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments about what is happening to the Affordable Care Act? Mary Agnes, the Affordable Care Act is still the law of the land. So what did these executive orders that the president did last week, what do they actually do?
Well, there's two. One would instruct areas of the government, the Treasury Department, Labor Department, and HHS, Health and Human Services, to look at the existing rules of the Affordable Care Act and to try to, in effect, loosen them up so plans that could be sold with association health plans, they're called AHPs, like a group of restaurateurs or a group of small business people, could come together and basically craft their own health insurance plan. Mm. But the thought is that the direction to those three agencies is to kind of loosen the reins. Maybe the plans wouldn't have to be as comprehensive. Maybe they wouldn't be as expensive. Then they also not have your consumer protections that are in the Affordable Care Act. That's what happened earlier last Thursday. And then late last Thursday, we all know that the president decided to stop paying these cost-sharing subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. There's two different kinds of subsidies. One is that allows you financial assistance if you qualify on income to pay for your premium. That one is still there, and 8 out of 10 beneficiaries of the Affordable Care Act get that subsidy. The second subsidy, the one that he is not going to pay out, is to help with cost sharing, co-pays, deductibles, that kind of out-of-pocket cost we all pay at the doctor and hospital. And he's not going to pay that, and that is a big concern for folks because about 60% of beneficiaries get those out-of-pocket payments, and they're directed to the insurers, and they're kind of on the hook for them. So this has really set off a lot of alarms.
Well, let me pick up on that one. And the president seemed to be saying that these insurance companies are, you know, making money hand over fist because of these subsidies coming from the government. But what options, I guess, or what choices do the insurance companies have? Are they going to eat the money? Are they going to pull themselves out of these marketplaces? What do you see as their options?
I think right now they're trying to figure out their next move. If, in fact, this holds and the president doesn't make those payments at the end of October, they typically come at the end of the month, the insurers are on the hook to honor the program, because the whole cost-sharing factions of the program, because they have to do that statutorily under the law. But I think what's going to happen is a lot of insurers are looking forward to the next enrollment season for 2018, and they could, even if they had put a bid in to sell coverage, they could withdraw that bid. They could leave a marketplace, and that could mean that your insurer, if they decide it's not really worth the money to stay, could do that. But one thing we have to remember here is a lot of insurers anticipated that President Trump was going to do exactly what he did, that he would pull back the cost-sharing subsidies, and they built that into their premiums, many of them saying it drives up their premiums by 20%. For 2018.
Is that why we saw in recent weeks these premiums going up so much and people obviously complaining about it?
Right. As they, you know, no business likes risk, and insurers are really adverse to risk. So if they looked at what the president was doing, President Trump was making these announcements late in the month after his inauguration, began to say, okay, we'll honor the cost sharing, we won't honor the cost sharing.
Right.
There's a whole legal case behind it. Arguing that President Obama spent this money without the permission of Congress, and one judge agreed with that, and it was in an appeal process, and then President Trump was elected and inaugurated. So I think as insurers looked at what was happening, they thought, you know what, we're going to hedge our bets. We're going to add money in our premiums to cover this just in case he pulls them. And so that's where you're seeing a lot of these big jumps.
Are people still enrolling in the Affordable Care Act, knowing how much uncertainty there is?
I think they will. I mean, if you look at it, if you're in the individual market and you need insurance, you're not part of an employer group or something else, and especially if you qualify for a subsidy, if you make up to 400% of the poverty line, pardon me, which is about, I think, 40-45% for $45,000 for an individual, you can get some assistance. So if you qualify for a cost-sharing a subsidy, or rather a premium subsidy as well, if you qualify for any of those, you would certainly try it, because as an individual on your own in a market, you would pay a much higher rate in most cases than you do if you work for someone and your employer gives you insurance.
Right. Talking about these associations or these plans that could or I guess could not could not have the same requirements as the Affordable Care Act, are these plans, and they have been used in the past, if you're really sick, do they provide the kind of coverage that people need, and are they affordable when you actually really need to use them?
Well, that's a great question, because let's say the plan had a very high deductible. And to be fair, some plans in the Affordable Care Act have a very high deductible. Right. But if an association plan, physician health plan rather, or AHP, required a lot of money out of pocket before coverage, or one thing sometimes these plans have, if they're more limited in scope, something like a hospital benefit might be so small that you don't realize until you get sick and you're hospitalized that, oh my goodness, this policy only covers maybe $10,000 of hospital care, and I've been in the hospital for a week and I've blown right through that.
Wow.
So proponents would tell you that they want to provide more flexibility, that not everyone needs a plan as generous as those offered under the Affordable Care Act. But once you start to limit coverage, or you give insurers more leeway to charge you more if you're sick or if you're older, you could find yourself with a policy that's not affordable and doesn't cover anything.
At what point does Obamacare become Trump care? That there's so much either cutting away of the various policies and programs that the Affordable Care Act just does not resemble what it did when it was passed a couple of years ago?
Well, that's a great question, because that's what you're hearing now is people look at this through the political lens, that will the Trump administration and Republicans on Capitol Hill get blamed if, in fact, you have problems from these decisions in the Affordable Care Act, if insurers drop out, if people get less choice. If insurers are allowed to reissue their rates for 2018, they could put in another rate request because of this to have premiums go even higher. The question is kind of who gets the blame. And I think Democrats are looking now at President Trump and Republicans and saying, basically, everyone can see what you're doing. You're trying to destroy the Affordable Care Act. You'll take full responsibility in the midterms and then perhaps the next presidential cycle. So, We still have a lot of tenets of the Affordable Care Act. You still have the marketplaces where people can buy coverage. You still have the premium subsidies that help people afford that. But it's, you know, for the next enrollment season, it's going to be very interesting to see how many insurers stay in the market, how many people enroll for the first time or re-enroll. If these association health plans are created, and chances are it will take a while for that to happen, but if those are created, do they pull off the younger people who are less expensive to insure and tend to be healthier, and that would raise premiums in the existing markets.
I'm looking at one of the headlines from Kaiser Health News this morning. Nearly 70% of people benefiting from insurance subsidies live in states that Trump won. Just talking about, I guess, the political calculation in what the president and, frankly, what Congress will do.
Right. This has been a fascinating thing to look at, because not only the cost-sharing subsidies, the big benefactors, as you mentioned, in the red states that voted for President Trump, but also Medicaid expansion as part of the Affordable Care Act. That's helped millions of people in those red states. Mm-hmm. And same thing for all the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. That's really helped a lot of people get coverage for the first time. It's helped states fight the opioid epidemic, which tends to be a little stronger in some of the rural areas. So that whole, you know, did these folks vote against their own self-interest? Well, President Trump is talking about how horrible the Affordable Care Act is, but if you are getting it and you're benefiting by it and you voted for President Trump, it's kind of an interesting thing to look at. But you know, there's things you can say to appease the base. President Trump really feels this is a very, very strong message for his base, and so do many conservative Republicans in the House and the Senate. You've got to dump the Affordable Care Act, but it's also going to mean that you are affecting millions of people.
Let me read an email from Mike from Ardmore. He says, the Affordable Care Act has been a life raft for young people over the age of 26 in the gig economy. Beginning in January, I was working 3 part-time jobs, none of which offered insurance. Obamacare offered me the freedom to pursue career choices without recklessly going without insurance. And, of course, that is a huge endorsement for the Affordable Care Act. But, Mary Agnes, there are states where the Affordable Care Act has not been particularly effective, either because insurance companies are pulling out of some of these states. The cost of this insurance has also been very expensive. What explains that? It's working in some places, but not in others.
Part of the rationale to work better in a state might be if you look at a state like California that set up its own state exchange and aggressively marketed to people in the state that you should enroll. Here's what the Affordable Care Act is. Here's what the plans are. Here's how they can work. If you have a state that didn't embrace the Affordable Care Act, did not create an exchange, perhaps did not take the Medicaid expansion, which is optional for states, then the way the ACA plays out in those states where the state government didn't embrace it, didn't set up exchanges, didn't expand Medicaid, you have probably fewer enrollees from the ACA in that area. And also, it's just a whole different view if the state doesn't embrace it and your national lawmakers are talking about how horrible it is. It doesn't really play out as well in your state as if the state embraced it. And to be fair, when they created the Affordable Care Act, they wanted to give states, Congress wanted to give states that option of setting up an exchange or not setting up an exchange. And only about, I want to say, 13 states, perhaps, in the District of Columbia actually have their own health insurance exchange. The rest of the folks go on healthcare.gov, and it's a federal exchange.
Is there any appetite in Congress not to replace or repeal, but actually to reform the Affordable Care Act?
Well, before the last Senate attempt to repeal the Graham-Cassidy bill that ended up not getting a floor vote, it would have repealed and replaced many elements of the ACA. You had bipartisan negotiations ongoing in a Senate committee with health jurisdictions. And those negotiations were basically brought to a halt when the Republicans in the Senate had a repeal and replace bill. They kind of wanted that to take all the attention. And so the question now is, will those bipartisan negotiations in the Senate resume? You have Lamar Alexander, who is a Republican from Tennessee, and Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington, of the main folks running those negotiations. Will those resume strength if they come up with a package to extend these subsidies, the cost-sharing subsidies? Will that get enough votes to pass not only in the House but also in the Senate? It's kind of an open question, because when you have Republicans talking, a lot of them, about how these cost-sharing reductions are a bailout, you know, close quote, for the health insurance companies, well, they really take a vote and do this. And it's kind of hard to judge, but a lot of people are looking at Congress to do that.
I'm Marty Moscoen. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Mary Agnes, let me ask you about something else. And this is the fact that Congress let the CHIP health insurance for children expire. This has nothing to do with the explain what are the implications of that? Let me just put it in a more straightforward way.
Well, let me be clear. They didn't actually let the program expire. Some funding was supposed to be renewed, I believe, by the end of September for the Children's Health Insurance Program. Many states have additional allotments of federal money that they're spending. But to be sure, over time, if that money went away and Congress didn't step up to help out, you would have a problem with funding CHIP. So you also have to remember, in Congress, there's great bipartisan support for that program. And I believe that it will move through the Senate and the House, and they'll give more money to CHIP. But the question to look at is, every time you have a must-pass piece of legislation, and CHIP is one of those because it has bipartisan support to insure kids, right? Everybody wants to do that.
Sure.
What other measures do they stick on that bill? For example, we just talked about these bipartisan negotiations. If those don't happen, would Democrats try to push cost-sharing reduction payments and an extension for a year or two on the CHIP bill.
Oh,
the proponents of the, yeah, you know, that's the thing. Any train that's leaving the station, you want to jump on Congress to get your measure passed. There's debate about whether or not that should happen, but I do think that Congress will revisit the Children's Health Insurance Program, the funding of it, and that they will up the funding because there are some changes made in funding formulas and so on that people are getting behind. And so I think it's going to happen.
Well, do you think it'll ever happen, Mary Agnes Carey, that we will resolve and come to some kind of consensus about health care and health insurance in the U.S.? You got about 20 seconds.
It's kind of a long shot, but you have to reduce the political punch of repealing the ACA before you really have a chance to sit down and talk about our health care system and how to fix its problems.
Well, on that note, Mary Agnes Carey, thank you once again for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. She's partnerships editor, also senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, catching us all up on some of the more recent news of the day. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. You can check out our new homepage as well. And you can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Adam Stanishevsky, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, thanks so much for joining us. Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri produced the program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thanks for joining us.